wonderful time, and God blessed us with safe travels, and even with the little boy who's teething right now, we made it through the week, and it was great. This morning, I'm having one of my friends from seminary come to preach. Paul grew up in St. Louis. He worked with Campus Crusade in Kansas City, and he's currently a pastor in the Kansas City area at another Presbyterian church. So without further ado, Paul.
How am I on sound? Good? Oh, it works. Beautiful. Well, good morning, Leota.
Good morning.
I came from Kansas City, as you heard, and it's a refreshing thing. In Kansas City, even on the suburbs where I'm located, there's nothing you can look at and you don't see buildings or roads. There's just no slice of perspective that you can get unless you're like in trees where you don't see that. So it was refreshing to come out and to have a lot of not buildings to look at on my way in here. There's something especially beautiful about the prairie and about the farmland, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to come out here and experience some of that. So I want to ask you this question. How often do you hear this question, especially if you're a parent? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? There's even a movie called Are We There Yet? Starring someone who may not be familiar to you, a guy named Ice Cube, probably not his real name. And he is tasked with taking a few kids on a road trip. And Are We There Yet is such a great phrase for what the experience is like of those guys are going on that road trip. And at every point, these kids are so restless and resentful of this long road trip that they make things very difficult. They hijack his car at one point. In fact, one of the best parts of the movie is they even try to convince a trucker using a sign out the window that they've been kidnapped. And you can just imagine how ridiculous that gets. When we are not sure of where we're going, when we get restless, looking for a promise to be fulfilled, or even just an expectation to be fulfilled, our restlessness can show up in funny ways, or sometimes even what may appear funny to the kids can be dangerous for you if you're the driver. Anybody ever get hit in the car with an "Are you there yet?" situation? I know I've been hit by my sister as well as my parents while the car was moving. That was special. So. When we look at a passage of Scripture like this, we see sin as a result of delayed promises being kept, that it can show up in increasing ways, and it can show up in all kinds of situations. So I want to show us in this passage, and frustratingly, can I turn this lamp on? There we go. Oh, yeah. See, now I can read. It can show us that God has a commitment to be faithful to his promises, even despite the things that we throw at it. So our response to God's faithfulness can take different forms. Okay, the first one is a good one. We can be relieved and we can be very happy when a promise, long expected, comes to fruition. Okay, so we can wait a long time sometimes to get something we really want, and the waiting actually makes it sweeter. Let me give you an example of this. When I was a kid, I loved video games. Loved Nintendo especially. It was the only kid on the block for a long time. Now you got, Sony and Xbox and all that, but Nintendo was the thing. And I subscribed to Nintendo's propaganda magazine, which said that it was, game tips, but really it was being sold stuff every week, and I got to pay for it. And reading this, I had this great expectation in the coming of this particular Nintendo system. And we were not a family of means, of much means. I mean, I was always fed, I was always clothed, I was always taken care of. But I didn't always get what I wanted when I wanted it, especially if it was a toy. And I had to wait 2 or 3 years for this thing after I got it, after I wanted it. And I looked at the Mario games, I was like, look at those enemies, they're so cool, I can't wait to play this. And I had to wait forever and ever. And 1 year for Christmas, I felt this is going to be the one. This is going to be the one. And we got through all the stuff, and I actually have video of how I reacted to this. Do you have that ready? This is opening up the present. Okay, that's not me. That's a 20 million view viral video on Facebook. But it was like that. It was sort of like that when I finally got my Nintendo. But you could tell this kid really wanted it, and you could tell I really wanted it too. I mean, I didn't react. He didn't even know how to touch the thing. He was just like, I have to have hands-on contact with this box in some way. And even the other presents he got were, it's a remote control car. It's a Nintendo 64 remote control car. No, it's just a regular remote control car. But everything had to be related to the one thing that he really wanted. And we see in this passage that there is a fulfillment of a promise with long expectation and with great importance attached to it. You know, there's not a lot of importance attached to me getting my Nintendo, but there's a lot of importance attached in this narrative to Abraham and Sarah getting Isaac. So you've been in this sermon series for 6 weeks. I counted your weeks on your website, how long this has been going on. And in your very first message that you heard on this, we got the initial promise to Abraham. He was called out, and he said, you leave where you are, leave your family, and go to a land that I will show you, and I will make you into a great nation, and I'm going to bless you. And so Abraham goes, great, that's wonderful. I get to be a blessing for the whole world, gets to come out of me. So Abraham starts waiting for his fulfillment of this promise. You've had to wait 6 weeks since you first found out about that promise. If you cared about the tension that's here in the story, you had to wait 6 weeks, and maybe less if you decided to read ahead, or if you've read this before. Abraham and Sarah, when they're waiting, the time between chapter 12, the promise given, and chapter 21, when finally we get a legitimate child that comes from Abraham and his wife, is a period of about 40 years. A lot has happened in that 40 years. Abraham is about 100 years old. So, some of you are elder statesmen of the church here. Men, if you were 60 years old and someone told you were going to have a lot of children, and you didn't have any children, doesn't seem too plausible. Ladies, if you were 50 years old and someone told you you were going to have a lot of children, probably not feeling like it's too possible. 40 years later, men, you're 100 years old. Women, you're 90 years old. And they're like, someone tells you, you are going to have children. Not too plausible. And you may have, at that point, in a 40-year gap, have given up, which is why it says a few chapters back, when the promise is finally given, she laughs. Sarah laughs. And now the day comes when her laughter, when she laughed at God initially, her laughter was, ha, 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 what a joke. Not going to happen. And today, when Isaac is born here, she laughs again. She calls him Isaac, and Isaac means he laughs. And it says, Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. No longer is that laughter sarcastic. Now that laughter is great joy. Sarah receives this amazing gift. Finally, see, the promise given to Abraham that you're going to be the father of many nations. When you don't have kids for 40 years and you're 100 years old, you start to wonder, what does this look like? What does this actually look like? Because it doesn't look like me having a child with my wife. And so they try to make up for that. And that's where we get the story of Hagar and Ishmael. So obviously Sarah is not going to be able to have a child. So we get Hagar instead, and we get the child Ishmael that comes from that. And they assume this is how the promise is going to be kept. But then God says, nope, it's going to come from your wife. It's going to come from Sarah. So after all this waiting, after trying to make the answer to the problem happen themselves, finally we get the real, actual fulfillment of the promise. This is the seed. This is the heir. This is the child who will be the father of these many nations. This is, in some ways, maybe one of the most theologically significant events in the entire Old Testament, or certainly in the book of Genesis. What happens is it then this promise, as we look through, now it's a happy thing, but there's been all kinds of problems along the way. So when Abraham and Sarah got impatient waiting for these promises to be fulfilled, sin increased. Okay, we lost faith, so we had to try to make a baby happen some other way. We lost faith, so we mocked God and mocked his promise. And today, the promise comes through, even despite all of that sin. So then I ask you, what good things have you had to wait for in your life? You may not have had God speaking to you in a voice like Abraham did that told you exactly how this was going to happen and reminding him a number of times along the years, no, really, the promise is coming. But some things you've had to wait for. What good things are those? You can probably think of several things off the top of your head, things that you had to wait for, or maybe even things that you still are waiting for. I had to wait for that Nintendo. I had to wait a couple years for that Nintendo. And when I got it, it was glorious. Now, do I still play it? No. I barely play it anymore. I don't have appreciation for that anymore. In my life also, like Stephen said, I came from a Campus Crusade background. I became a Christian through Campus Crusade in Kansas City. And I originally went to school pursuing a career in music. My bachelor's degree is in music performance. And so I thought I was going to be a symphony player. Well, then I got involved in ministry, and I remembered somewhere in the back of my mind someone telling me in youth group, "I think you're going to be a music minister someday, or at least some kind of a pastor." That's ridiculous. Why would I? I mean, no, I'm going to be a symphony player. Of course, that's what I'm going for. And then things kind of didn't work out with that, and I went into ministry. And then I thought, maybe I'm going to go to seminary and learn how to do this, you know, theologizing, pastoring stuff. And I had to wait 3 years after I decided to go to seminary in order for my life situation to be in the right place to be able to go. So I had to wait for that. And then seminary took 4 years. That's a difficult time of waiting when you're preparing for a job that you're going to do and you don't have the freedom to be able to do it. And then finally getting to the end of seminary, and now I'm a pastor, and I actually do music ministry at my church too. And so somehow this promise that was made, this prophecy that was spoken over to me by a woman at my church back in the mid-90s, in May of 2014, I became a pastor, a youth, and a music pastor. So maybe you have had something that took even longer than that. And now I'm here in living the fulfillment of what I think is like the calling for me in my life. And do I appreciate it? Well, some days. And some days I wish things were a little different in my job. I wish I could do more of this. I wish I had more of this. I wish I had more friends around that were my age, because most of the people in the church are older. You actually have more young adults at this church than I do in mine. But am I grateful? Are you grateful? And it's easy to get there. I mean, you cultivate an attitude of expectancy that you're going to get what you were promised. Not in some like name it and claim it kind of thing, but that when God makes a promise to you and there's a good thing, and you know, just wait and expect to get it. Try not to grow bitter in your expectation when it takes a long time. It took a long time for Abraham and Sarah. No one could have ever guessed it was going to take 40 years. But to God, 1,000 years is as a day, right?
Yes.
So our slowness is not the same as his slowness. There's a purpose for your waiting, but you can cultivate that attitude of expectancy and then gratitude. You can keep a log of the thing. When you've seen people get the answers to prayers, some people keep these prayer journals where they're not just keeping track of the things that they're asking for, but they're keeping track of when they've seen prayers answered. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to look back at those and to say, oh, God was faithful. He came through. I can still have gratitude for things that maybe don't even excite me anymore. Heck, I could still be grateful that I finally got that video game system back in the 90s. I mean, I should certainly be grateful for the ministry opportunity I have right now. So that's the first way that we respond to God's faithfulness, is we get what we want and we get real excited about it. Finally, the promise is fulfilled. Now, our second response that we have to that is we can be jealous to guard privileges. Okay, so they've received good things, Abraham and Sarah, they've received a good thing. But she's very jealous to guard the privilege. Okay, let's look at Sarah's situation here. Sarah, I want to say Sarah has short-term memory loss when Isaac shows up, because she becomes not a fan of Ishmael and not a fan of Hagar. Who got Ishmael and Hagar into this situation to begin with? That's Sarah. See, Sarah, Hagar and Ishmael, this is what Sarah wanted. She made this happen. And she has short-term memory loss here, where she forgets that she's the one responsible for this. Okay? Well, let's look at what happens here. So it says the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. That's probably when Isaac's about 3 years old. Infant mortality is not a big deal in our context anymore, and especially in Western culture with our medicine and all that. But 3 years old was a big deal, especially when your child was born when a woman was 90 years old. You know, there's a lot of health risks associated with women who get pregnant in their older years. And a child hitting 3 years old is a big deal. So we got a big feast. Isaac was weaned. Ishmael, by the way, is probably about between 8 and 11 years old at this point. So Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had born to Abraham, laughing. Where did we hear about laughing before? Sarah laughs. She calls her child Isaac. Now Ishmael laughs. And this laughing is a different kind. We've got sarcastic laughter, we've got happy laughter, and this is mocking laughter. So this is Ishmael now mocking the covenant child, the child through whom this promise is going to be delivered. Ishmael is probably feeling a little threatened by the presence of this little baby, because for a long time Ishmael had the assumption that he is now going to be the one through whom this blessing comes. Ishmael, when God gives Abraham the terms of how this arrangement is going to work, he says, "You're going to mark your kids, and here's how you're going to mark your kids to show that they're part of the promise. You're going to circumcise them. All the children in your household, when they're 8 days old, you're going to do that." Now, Ishmael was a little bit older than that, but he received that sign. And it would appear as though Ishmael is the child through whom these promises are going to happen. Well, not anymore. Now there's somebody else, a more legitimate claimant to that. So how is Ishmael feeling about that? Well, we don't know exactly what Ishmael is feeling about that, but it stands to reason that he's probably feeling a little threatened. Otherwise, why would you mock a baby? Okay, so Ishmael is a threat to this promise. And who knows? Ishmael might even take a force to get what he wants to be able to stay the child that is the one through whom the promise comes. And so getting Ishmael and getting Hagar out becomes for Sarah a priority. So what's Sarah's intention here? She wants to protect her son. She says to Abraham, cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of the slave woman shall not be heir with my son Isaac. So I don't want this kid around to muddy the waters. I don't want there to be any question about who is the one through whom the promise is going to come. Now what happens when they get out there? When Abraham can see this coming. He knows that to get them out of town or to get them out of their camp is basically to give them a death sentence. So he does what he can. He gives them some water so that they can survive out there. And even that water is not enough. So if Abraham knows that, Sarah probably knows that too. So Sarah's intention is to end what happened with Hagar and Ishmael. She wants these guys gone. If they die, so what? That's a problem. We get a real big problem here with Sarah wanting to guard this privilege that she gets. So now all of a sudden, I don't need these other people anymore. Now they can go away. You know, we probably all thought about, you know, we watch political thrillers, and you know, you're friends one day, and then when you're not serving the purpose anymore, you get cement shoes. Maybe that's older political thrillers. They probably don't do that too much anymore. But maybe mobster movies, where someone you thought was your friend, all of a sudden, you're not a use anymore, and you might even be a threat to their power, so you got to go. It's kind of like that. So what's the thing in your life that, to protect your privilege, and it could be a gift from God, it could be something else, what are you going to pay any price to be able to keep? Sarah's willing to pay any price to keep the safety of her son Isaac. For me, you know, we've all got a number of idols in our lives that we look at things and say, this kind of takes the position of God in my life, or something I would just do anything to hold on to. Mine is movies. So I'm a huge movie fan. I've got probably between 500 and 600 DVDs or so. And I've had these even for a long time, even before I was in seminary. And I would go through periods where I would have money trouble. I was like, well, how am I going to be able to afford the, you know, paying all my bills or this, you know, thing I've got to do? And I would look at this wall of DVDs and go, see, if I just took them to a pawn shop and got almost no money out of them, I mean, it would still give me enough money to be able to pay for the things I need to do. Or I'm thinking I could sell them all as a big box on eBay or something. Like, the money would come. The problem would be over if I could sell the DVDs. And I still have them all. Because that's the price I was willing to pay to be able to keep the thing that I wanted. I had this privilege of having this great DVD collection, and I wouldn't do away with it. I was willing to, you know, have my credit ruined, or, you know, get harassing phone calls, or to feel stressed all the time. So don't make me lose those. So what privilege will you do anything to keep on to? So remember the promise to Abraham. So the reason why they got into this whole thing to begin with is Abraham has promised, you're going to be a blessing to who? Everybody. All the nations. All the nations through you will be blessed. In fulfillment of this promise and trying to hold on to the promise of people, Sarah forgets the mission of blessing. So Sarah's intention is actually to withhold blessings, even life itself, from the nations. So are there people in the world that for whatever reason you don't like and that you would never think of blessing? Don't make me help those people, because I would lose out on even something as simple as comfort. But maybe money, maybe time. When we look at Sarah's situation, I just see myself when I look at this, and I go, even in the presence of lots of fulfilled promises and lots of blessings, I can still totally miss the point of why it's being given to me. So what's God's response here? How does God respond to His chosen people screwing up the project? Okay, so the project is bless all people, bless all the nations, have a big family and all that. Is God just going to get like irate and say, no, I'm sorry, we're done with this. We're going back to a Noah thing here, and we're just wiping the whole thing clean. I'm picking new people. You guys obviously don't get it. God's response to this is he is faithful to his promises, even in the midst of our faithlessness, even in the midst of our sin. I originally titled this Faithfulness, Sin, and More Faithfulness, or A Sin Sandwich with Faithfulness Bread. Because you know, people often say that like it's a certain kind of sandwich when there's two things on the outside that are similar. They call that the sandwich. No, the sandwich is what's in it. You don't have a French bread sandwich with salami in it. You have a salami sandwich on French bread. Well, maybe you don't have salami sandwiches, but sometimes I do. But this is a sin sandwich. So sin is the centerpiece of this thing, but faithfulness is surrounding it on every side. We can see great examples here of God's commitment to what he's doing here. As we've been painting this picture, this situation is clearly almost totally out of control. We're actually supposed to be sympathizing with Hagar and Ishmael, and I hope that you do when you read this story, that you go, it's not right what happened to those people, getting thrown out there and condemned to death just because Sarah doesn't want them around. Okay, Abraham feels that way too. Abraham, he's losing people that he got attached to. I mean, Hagar is not just the woman that he had a child with. She became a second wife to him. And Ishmael was his son that he's held on to now for at least 8 years. He's losing them because his wife says, get him out. But through this, we see signs that God has plans to bless even when we intend to curse. In verse 12, God says to Abraham in reaction to this, he says, be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you. For through Isaac shall your offspring be named. And I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring. So we get into an interesting theological question here. So clearly what Sarah's done is wrong. And then God says, do it anyway. Because Sarah is the privileged one. I mean, it's through Isaac that this promise is going to come to fruition. So I want us to look at this and hold it in tension and say, God can do great things and God has plans for what he wants to do using sinful people and using bad decisions. I don't want to make this into like a Hallmark card that, you know, it says that, you know, like green things sprout up from the ashes or something. But the concept is sort of like that, where God can use even sin, God can use evil to accomplish his purposes. So when we look at a difficult situation, a terrible situation, we can affirm that it's wrong, that it's evil, and we can also look for hope there and know that God has some kind of a plan for what he wants to do with it. He doesn't call the thing itself good. He doesn't call wanting to get rid of Hagar and Ishmael a good thing. He says it just needs to happen. So God has a plan for a good to come out of a bad thing. And God also intends to bless people. See, when that promise came back in Genesis 12, you will be a blessing to all the nations. Sarah doesn't want to be a blessing to all the nations. Sarah wants to keep her thing right here. But through that decision, God does bless the nations anyway, because Ishmael, just being part of the family, gets to also be a great nation. And they get provided for with this water, and they get provided for with a family, a wife for him out of the land of Egypt. He becomes an expert bow hunter. Ishmael flourishes, even though someone's trying to kill him, basically. Blessings do come to the nations because of this. When Abraham's meager attempts at providing for them, you know, giving them a skin of water, there's more miracles to come. Ishmael becomes a great nation. In fact, the Arab people look to Ishmael as their father. So there are many, many people in the world that have come as a result of this, that have contributed a lot to culture. Hagar was not disappointed by what ended up happening. There is a promise that still got fulfilled. They weren't the chosen people. They weren't the people of the promise, but they certainly benefited greatly as a result of what happened. God didn't make a mistake with that, and God didn't have to remedy a mistake either in getting rid of them. Now, if we look at the contrast between Hagar and Ishmael, between Hagar and Sarah, there's an additional place in the Bible that talks about this. In the book of Galatians, chapter 4, verses 21 through 31, if you want to jot that down or even look at it, God shows us that he's actually building for us a picture between these two women of people who try to get favor with God by obeying the law versus people who try to get favor with God or people who get favor with God by grace. The gospel, the message there in Galatians is that there are people that are in slavery because Hagar is the slave woman. I mean, it even just calls her the slave woman here. So these are people that are in bondage. And then there's Isaac, the one who was born the right way, out of the legitimate wife. And so we've got slave, and we've got free. And Galatians draws the point, I don't think this is necessarily what Moses was thinking when he wrote this, but it's providing us a picture. In the gospel, you can try to get your righteousness by doing the right thing versus resting, knowing that you are one of God's people. The gospel brings together slave and free, and it makes us all free. So the gospel would say that Hagar and Ishmael don't have to go. In fact, Hagar and Ishmael can be free people. So in this, so we look at this and we see that finally, you know, God does make good to his promises. He blesses Isaac. You know, there's a lot of Genesis in Old Testament and New Testament left to go after this. I mean, in my Bible, we're on page 15, and we've got, I don't know, more than 1,000 left. So the project doesn't end here, even with all this junk going on. Even when Abraham and Sarah sin over and over and over again, faithfulness keeps coming, and it keeps making those promises good. So what have you given up? What have you given up hoping for because you feel guilty about your sin? In Christianity, it can be very, you know, we're in touch with this us and God thing, that we're in a relationship with God and that God brings us blessing and God makes promises to us and makes good on his promises. And it can be really easy when you don't get what you want in the time frame that you're looking for it to think, God must be punishing me. I imagine we've all felt that way at some point. Maybe you're even feeling that way today. Maybe you're experiencing pain or sickness or loss or hope deferred, and your heart is sick, and you say, God must be punishing me. What did I do to deserve this? But that's not what we see here. Even when Sarah tried to kill people and basically commit genocide before they even became a race, blessing came. God brings blessings to us even though we're often so faithless to his promises. So here's the question that we look, you know, God's promises, got to wait a long time, here's how we respond, here's how God responds, all that. Are we there yet? There's the big question. Are we there yet to getting the thing that we're hoping for? And this passage and the whole rest of all the looks at the promises, it says, you know what it says? It says we're going to get there. It says we're going to get there. Abraham looked for the day when his descendants would be like the stars of the sky and they would inhabit the promised land. He looked at that, he believed God, and God said, that's righteousness. But he didn't see it for a long, long, long time. He didn't see the stars of the sky, the descendants numbering like the stars of the sky. He didn't even see them in the land that had been promised. But they got there. It took a few hundred years, but they got there. And every step along the way, they deserved to have those promises canceled. It's really easy for us to like read the Old Testament and to see these stories and go, these boneheads, I would never do that. I would, you know, they didn't know what they got. You know, they're getting up there, Moses is getting the tablets on Mount Sinai, let's build some golden calves. You know, it seems so foolish. Well, all sin is foolish like that. We've been given a great promise that you will be like Christ. And yet we're content with sin. We all deserve to have those promises canceled. These people more than as much as anybody. But ultimately, the promise got fulfilled in ways that they could never have expected. That blessing to all the nations, there's little pieces of it that come along the way, but ultimately it gets fulfilled in Christ, in Jesus giving himself for the sins of all people, that everyone can experience it. All the nations, the people that you don't like, they can experience it too. In fact, some of them are probably even chosen for it. Maybe even someone you just hate. Yeah, God can bring those promises to them. Ultimately, this promise was fulfilled in Jesus, and the nations continue to be blessed by that chapter 12 promise to Abraham. Through all the nations, through you, all nations will be blessed. And now we're here as Abraham's children too. You guys are part of this category too. We are there yet. We are there yet. And we're still looking forward for more to come. Because this isn't as good as it gets. Let's pray.